The call, and the police say your son's been picked up. You go to the doctor, and he looks at you, and after an exam, he says, it's malignant. Go to work, and the boss says, we have to lay off some people, and you're laid off. When you hear those terms, it forces you to go on a road that you didn't want to travel. That's called a detour. And sometimes we get onto detours that we cause them to happen ourselves. And I've invited a friend of mine to share with us a message today about detours. He, in first service, came over to me. His name's Ron Pinkston. I'll have him come up in just a second. But he came over to me. He says, Tim, I don't think I'm supposed to teach the message that I've given to you and it's in the bulletin. I think the Lord said for me to teach on another one. So I says, well, I could never do that, but if you can do that, go for it. So so you can just throw your bulletins away. They're not going to be used today. But he has a message for us about detours that I gave him permission. And so, Ron, come on up here. Let me introduce you. His wife, Susan, is here. Susan, why don't you stand? Let us welcome you. I don't think we did that first service. My remiss. I don't know really what to call him as far as a title. I could call him pastor because he's pastored two very fruitful churches, one in Winters, California, and one in Danville, California. I could call him supervisor, presbyter. I don't know what the correct term would be because he oversees 200 churches. He deals with helping 200 pastors in a denomination called the Four Square Denomination. I could call him author because he's written several books. There's some books out there that are for sale. He didn't push that at all, but I wanted him to bring his books. He didn't bring a whole lot. You should have brought more. So hopefully we got some for the people in the second service. But on the way out, you may want to touch base with the guest services. I wrote a book on how to deal with cancer. Has some specific insights if that's been your diagnosis. Walking with the Father. A book, isn't it called Our Father? Some really great things, some CDs. He's actually done the whole New Testament on CD. Now, I have a whole copy of the old Bible, the whole Bible. What version do you do that in?
I think it was NIV.
NIV, okay. Yeah. I have the New Living Translation, and I also have the NIV, but I'm going to get yours because I like your voice.
Oh.
So, hey, listen, if you listen to someone's, you don't want to listen to the Bible, but I think I'll get his CDs. You can check those out afterwards. But more than that, he's a man of God. I have sat under his ministry. I've heard him speak. I can't think of one time that I haven't heard God address something in my heart when I sat under his ministry. There was one time he talked about specifically saying, the further you are away from an encounter with God, you're dangerous. You're more dangerous the further away you are from an encounter with God. We need to be having daily encounters with God. And that has stuck with me because there are times when I have not walked as closely. Many of us may be here today, we're following God, but maybe we're following at a distance. And that distance causes problems. Every time I've heard him speak, he's ministered to me. So I'm gonna turn it over to him. I know you're going to receive God's word to you. Together, Ron, I'm so delighted to have you and Susan here. I look forward to having lunch with you afterwards and talking a little bit more in depth.
Thank you, Tim. Love you.
Let's welcome him, folks, would you please?
Thanks. Thank you. Hey, you brought a Bible or some sort of an electronic device that you use for one? Turn to Matthew chapter 18. And I had a detour 6 years ago, a little over 6 years ago. I had lymphoma and went to the doctor. I had back problems. I had never been to a chiropractor in my life. Went to the chiropractor who was part of our church, and she started working on me, and it just, the pain was tremendous, and I didn't normally have back pain, so that was unusual. That's what made me go to the chiropractor for the first time in my life, and then in the middle of it, I said, I can't take this anymore, and she said, you know what, I don't think this is a back problem. You need to go downstairs and see John, who was our primary physician and also a member of the church, and so I went down to see John, and he said, I think you've got an ulcer. So, blabbermouth that I am, that weekend in the services, I asked everybody to pray for me and said, "I think, you know, the doctor told me I have an ulcer, so, you know, all you people are stressing me out. So if you would just, you know," no, I didn't say that. I just said, "Would you pray for me?" So everybody prayed for me over the weekend. Monday, I was worse. So I went back to see John again. I said, "John, whatever that stuff you gave me for my ulcer, it's not working, man." So he had me lay down. He started poking around. He said, "I don't think this is an ulcer. I want you to get a CAT scan today." So he got me in. They found a cantaloupe-sized tumor right here that could not be operated on because it was such a virulent cancer that if just the tiniest little cell leaked out, that would be it. So I was sick for the better part of a year. For sure, 6 full months, I was away from the church, just home trying to survive. And what a detour. But the beauty of that experience was, and I don't know how to say this more eloquently, but people say, talk about how important prayer is. But I can honestly say, during those 6 months, I felt the prayers of the saints. It was profound. The day after I was diagnosed, I prayed and asked the Lord, "Lord, you got to tell me what's going on here. Are you taking me home, or am I going to get well?" The doctor didn't tell me until a year ago that he thought I was going to die. He waited till I was 5 years out to tell me that he didn't think I would make it. Because now, once you get 5 years out with that kind of cancer, you're pretty home free. So hallelujah for that. But that was quite a detour. And what the Lord spoke to me the day after I was diagnosed was, he said, when the Queen of Sheba came to see Solomon, it says she went away overwhelmed by what she saw. And he said, "I'm going to do that to your enemy. I'm going to send him home overwhelmed by what I do." And I have to say that really happened. People brought us food for 6 months. Every night we had dinner provided for us. It was unbelievable. I got cards, letters from virtually around the world, South Africa, Australia, I mean, all over the world and the United States, people telling me that they were praying for me. And here I am 6 years later. I do believe absolutely, partially as a result. Thank you, Lord. Of the prayers of the saints. People like you praying, I believe, had everything to do with me standing here today. So all that to say, there are no dead ends with God. Just detours. So don't be afraid of detours. Don't be afraid if you get off track a little bit. God will get you back. How do I know that? Well, sweetheart, I still do. And I want to follow that up with, I always will. Then you're saying, "Oh, but you don't know the rest of the story. You don't know what a rat I am." Because it was 42 years ago. Well, it was 40 years ago, 44 years ago, we were ready to get married. We had the rings, the dress, invitations, church, pastor, we're all set. 2 weeks before the wedding, I pulled out. I don't know why she didn't like me after that. But she had a problem with me. So she moved away to Southern California to get away from me. And for 2 years, shortly after she left, I realized I made a mistake. This is really the person I want to spend the rest of my life with. So I tried to pursue her, but she made it really clear, you know, nothing's happening here. We were not Christians. In the meantime, she became a Christian, moved back up to Northern California. I was still not one, but I thought, here's my opening. You know, so I went to see her, and she said, "I'm a Christian now, and I hope you become one, but don't get any ideas if you do. That won't change anything. We're done. That's over." Okay, I got it. But I did become a Christian. I wandered into a church on Sunday night and got on my knees. There were 30 people there that night. When you're the only non-Christian in the room, it's really obvious. Where the carcass is, there will the vultures gather. You know, I mean, man, everybody's eyes are on me, and I'm the most shy person in the universe. I flunked speech in high school because I couldn't talk for 3 minutes in front of my peers. That paralyzed me. I was the starting quarterback on the football team, and I knew if I got an F in that class, I'd be ineligible. I didn't care. There couldn't be anything worse than standing up in front of my peers for 3 minutes. Obviously, I'm healed. It's gone more than 3 minutes already, but that's how shy I was as a person, just a very withdrawn introvert, and God did a miracle. I got on my knees that night, and I said, God, if you're real, I'll give you my whole life. I want to be a Christian, but I can't fake this thing, so I just have to know you're real. So I'll give you 30 days. That's not a recommended methodology for becoming a Christian. Don't do that. But God sees the heart. He understands the sincerity of the human heart, and when you're sincere, He is too. So He knew that wasn't some sort of a game, that I meant it, and that if He revealed Himself to me, I would give Him the rest of my life, and that's exactly what's happened. In that 30 days, so many things happened, you would not believe it. I got orders to go back into the army and orders to leave for Germany in 30 days. That happened immediately after my prayer. Boom! I'm just hanging out in my hometown in Northern California, and I find out just a couple days after praying that prayer that I'm going to be in Germany in 30 days, back in the army. And then my beautiful wife, who's my ex-fiance, who doesn't like me at all, is on a lake with another guy, a nice Republican, who her parents really like Republicans, and, you know, I was Peace and Freedom Party back then, and some of you will need to forgive me for that, but that's okay. And so she's on the lake with this rich Republican guy, and her parents are rich Republicans, and so they really like this guy. And so they're just sitting there in a boat on a lake, and all of a sudden she hears an audible voice, like mine right now. It's so real that she looks over on the shore to see who is talking to her. That's how real it was. And here's what the voice said. What are you doing with this man? Ron is your husband. When God speaks for you, you don't have to say anything. So, you know, you've heard God is on your side? He definitely was on my side that day. And so she just told the guy to get lost, and she came and picked me up. I was on my way to Germany. She didn't know that. I didn't know she was coming. She picked me up at the bus depot, and she proposed to me. And we ended up getting married. 1 week later, we still had the rings, the dress, the invitations. We had to scratch out the date a little bit, but, you know, the preacher, the church, the whole thing. We got a full-blown wedding in 1 week. Church was packed. We went on a one-week honeymoon, and boom, I'm off to Germany, and she followed me a couple months later. Why am I saying all that? Because I want to talk to you for a few minutes today about the detour of offense and forgiveness. What is the point of a detour? It's to eventually to get you back on the main road, right? It always starts off and can be scary to get on a detour because you're often going somewhere you haven't been before and it's really uncomfortable. That's what offense does to us. It takes us off the main road and puts us in a place where we really don't want to be. But forgiveness gets you back to the main road, gets you back on the highway, gets you back moving at the speed you should be moving. And so that's what happened. My wife forgave me 42 years ago. And because of that, I can say I still do, and I always will, because of God's amazing power through forgiveness. So if you have a Bible, turn to Matthew 18, and you just forgive that. That's it. Stuff happens, right? And Matthew 18, it's a little detour, yeah, for the little guy. Matthew 18, verse 21, Peter's having an exchange with Jesus. And Peter comes to Jesus and he asks, Lord, how many times shall I forgive my brother or sister who sins against me? Up to seven times? Now listen, parenthetically, let me just say, come on, he's asking about someone in particular. This guy's only hanging out with 12 people right now. 11 apostles and a guy named Jesus. That's his whole life. So when he says, how many times shall I forgive my brother? And he throws in sister just to, you know, how many times shall I forgive my brother? Who's he talking about? One of the other 11 apostles. He has to be. Nobody would have that much opportunity for seven offenses. So he's talking about one of the other 11 apostles. Could have been Andrew, could have been John, could have been Bartholomew. I don't know who, but he's talking about one of the other guys that he's hanging out with. So who has the greatest opportunity to offend you this week? The people closest to you, right? Absolutely. Because you have the most interchanges, the most possibilities. So has anybody been offended in the last 30 days by anyone? Anybody done anything, said anything that hurt your feelings? Or like 10 of you, that's it? I mean, nobody else has actually, come on. Absolutely. So he says, now when Peter says seven times, he's thinking, of course he's thinking Jesus is going to, yeah, seven, that's good. Way to go, Peter. But Jesus doesn't say that. Peter's thinking, if I forgive somebody seven times, and you're probably thinking the same thing. If I forgive somebody seven times, shoot, that's a lot of forgiveness. That ought to count for something, don't you think? Careful before you answer that. Because Jesus answered, I tell you, not seven times, but 77 times. And in the original language, that's potentially an infinite number. You just keep on. Jesus is saying, you just keep on forgiving. Just keep on forgiving. Therefore, the kingdom of heaven, Jesus goes on to say, is like, and when you hear those words in the New Testament, in the Gospels, therefore the kingdom of heaven is like, please, if you don't hear anything else I say today, hear this. Whenever Jesus says, therefore the kingdom of heaven is like, what he is telling you and me is, this is how God works on earth. So if you reverse that, you can always tell, you can find out if God isn't working in your life, if you're trying to follow Christ, but your Christianity just doesn't seem to be working, and there are a lot of Christians I meet whose Christianity isn't working very well. If it's not working, you want to go to one of these places where Jesus says, this is how God works. This is what the kingdom of heaven is like. Because he's helping us understand. So why is that important? Because this is one of those places that if your life isn't working as a Christian, you're not really experiencing the power of God. What Pastor Tim described and what I said years ago is, if you're not becoming more relational with God, you are becoming more religious. It's inevitable. You can't avoid that. If you're not becoming more relational, more intimate, more conversational, more transformational with the God of the universe, you will be inexorably gravitating toward religiousness. And ultimately, if you keep doing that, you will end up, hopefully still in a church, but you will end up in a church just fulfilling your duty, showing up, singing a few songs, fulfilling your obligation, and then going out and being the person you are the rest of the week. And that sucks. That's not real Christianity. So, you okay so far? Because it goes down from here. Just kind of, okay, all right. Therefore, Jesus says, the kingdom of heaven is like a king who wanted to settle accounts with his servants. As he began the settlement, a man who owed him 10,000 bags of gold was brought to him. That is, as we say in the vernacular, a lot of gittes. 10,000 bags of gold. Since he was not able to pay, the master ordered that, it was a man who owed him 10,000 bags of gold. Since he wasn't able to pay, the master ordered that he and his wife and his children and all that he had would be sold to pay the debt. At this, the servant fell on his knees before him. Be patient with me, he begged, and I will pay back everything. That's a lie. He's a servant, not a CEO. He's never going to get 10,000 bags of gold in his entire lifetime. He could work three jobs for the rest of his life, and he's not going to get 10,000 bags of gold. He's lying through his teeth. Why does that matter to you or me? Because all of us have done that. All of us at some point, most likely, in our relationship with God have said things like, oh Lord, you know, I'm going to give you everything. And we meant it, but we don't. We've all said, Lord, if you just get me out of this one, I'll... And we mean it, but we don't. We're all a little bit like this guy. And that's why the next verse is so amazingly important. Because you would expect at that point, I mean, the master knows he's lying. You would expect the master to say, that's a lie, and you're finished. But he doesn't. It says, the servant's master took pity on him, canceled the debt, 10,000 bags of gold, canceled the debt and let him go. Wow. But when that servant went out, and here's the point, he didn't really believe the debt was canceled. That's what the rest of this reveals. He just got delivered from 10,000 bags of gold of debt, but he didn't believe it was real. So he went out and he found one of his fellow servants who owed him 100 silver coins, a mere pittance compared to what he owed. He grabbed him and he began to choke him and he said, pay back what you owe me. His fellow servant fell to his knees and begged him in the same way. He said, be patient with me and I will pay it back. That could have been true. He could have gathered enough relatives to get 100 silver coins and pay the man back. But because this guy didn't believe he would ever really be forgiven, he refused. Instead, he went off and had the man thrown into prison until he could pay the debt. When the other servants saw what had happened, they were outraged and went and told their master everything that had happened. Then the master called the servant in. You wicked servant, he said. I canceled all that debt of yours because you begged me to. Shouldn't you have had mercy on your fellow servant just as I had on you? In anger, his master handed him over to the jailers, rather, to be tortured until he should pay back all that he owed. Now, the next verse is absolutely critical. Because in Matthew chapter 6, has anybody heard of something called the Lord's Prayer? Anybody ever said the Lord's Prayer? Yeah. You don't even have to be a Christian to have heard the Lord's Prayer. Well, one of those things in the Lord's Prayer is what? Forgive us our trespasses or our debts as we forgive our debtors. As we forgive, forgive us. If you reverse that, what you're hearing yourself say is, Lord, if I don't forgive other people, don't forgive me. And the only part of the Lord's Prayer that Jesus commented on in Matthew 6 sounds exactly like verse 35 in Matthew 18. Now remember, in some translations, Matthew 6 uses the word debt. Forgive us our debts as we forgive our debtors. What's being used in here? Forgiveness is being compared to what? Debt. You owe me. He owed the master, and then another guy owed him. It's all about debt. Forgiveness is very much a mathematical equation. So verse 35 is almost identical to the verse after the Lord's Prayer where he says, this is how my heavenly Father will treat each of you unless you forgive your brother or sister from your heart. Why is that so important to you or to me? Because I believe the Lord's Prayer is not meant to be recited verbatim. And the reason I believe that is because it never appears in the New Testament again that way. No one ever recites the Lord's Prayer in the New Testament. Well, then what was Jesus doing? If he didn't want them to just say, our Father who art in heaven, hallowed be your name, your kingdom come, your will be done. If he didn't want them to do that over and over, what did he want them to do? He wanted them to talk to God about the five things that were most important to him every day. That's my view anyway. And those five things, one of them was forgiveness. Why do I need to talk to God about forgiveness every day? Come on. Every day? Really? Yes. And here's why. Because the opportunity to be offended is with you every day. Every day. All you have to do is go to the store, drive down the highway, and somebody goes in front of you. And what do you do? Hopefully you don't share a gesture with them. A non-Christian gesture. Or you don't scream or do those. But, you know, we get upset, don't we? Or someone just says something to you. Maybe you work as a... I think the worst job on the planet is a grocery clerk. Or any kind of a store clerk where you're at a register. People are so mean. Mean, they expect you to... And when you don't, they get mad. And if you're... clerk at the register, I guarantee you, you're needing forgiveness every day. But Jesus taught us then to pray about forgiveness every day. Why? Because when we don't, the debts start to pile up in our souls. Imagine, if you will, if I were to hand each of you today a rock, because elsewhere in the New Testament, the Bible refers to an offense as a rock of offense. So imagine if I were to give you a rock today, and imagine this week, if I were able to walk with you all week long this week, and just hang out with you, and I had all these rocks, and every time someone offended you and you didn't deal with it, I handed you the rock and said, put this in your pocket. Put this in your pocket. Now, or your purse, whatever. If it was in your pocket, imagine at the end of the week, if those rocks are all in your pocket, what would that do to you? Well, it would make you feel heavy. It would weigh you down. In other words, it would make you pretty irritable, huh? I mean, it'd be kind of chafing, make you raw. And if it's a purse, you'd really be weighed down, you know, and you'd, things would start straining on you. Well, that's what unforgiveness does. It weighs us down. And according to Jesus, it puts us and our lives in a kind of prison. Let me illustrate that for you. Has anybody ever irritated you?
Yes.
Yeah? Am I the only one? Nobody over here has ever been irritated? Oh, okay, good. So years ago, Susan and I planted a church in a little town called Winters. And about 2 years into it, we'd gotten a building and and I had two staff people, a secretary and an assistant pastor. The assistant pastor, I have to be honest, was like the nicest guy on the planet. I mean, he's like Pastor Tim. He's just, you know, Pastor Tim's like Raymond. Everybody loves Pastor Tim, right? He's just like the nicest guy on the planet. And this guy was like that. The difference is Pastor Tim really is a pastor. I've watched him. He's the real deal. This guy probably shouldn't have been a pastor, and he just irritated the heck out of me. I'm sorry, but that's the truth. I mean, I would ask him to do things, and again, well-meaning, well-intentioned, nicest guy, but he would end up doing things in a way that I didn't, that's not how I wanted it done, and it was really messed up. And so one day, my wife had gone to the first women's retreat that our church was having, and she had taken the secretary with her, so I'm in the office, and I'm all alone, and it's Friday, and I suddenly remembered, oh my goodness, we're supposed to send a brochure up to camp. You know those brochures when you go to a camp, a lot of times that tell you who the speaker is and the agenda for the weekend and all of that. And I told Susan we'd get that done for her and we'd send it up to camp. Well, I'm left to do it because a few days earlier I had said to my assistant, look, when you get a chance, would you go to Davis, which was 10 miles away, sometime this week and pick up the supplies for the church? Well, he picked Friday to do that. He forgot that we had the brochure to produce, and I am an absolute graphics idiot. I mean, I have nothing to offer graphically. So you wouldn't even want me to draw a stick man or anything, because it could get weird. You know, I just don't have any graphics abilities. And back then, this is how old I am, back in the mimeograph days, you crank it by hand, and when you're done, you are basically an ink man. You're just ink all over you. It's horrible. Thank God for copy machines. You know, I believe there were no mimeographs till Adam and Eve sinned, you know, and then that was part of the fall. But anyway, so I'm trying to produce this brochure and it's just not going anywhere. And I'm really frustrated now because I know if I send what I've produced up to camp, no woman will ever go to a camp again just because of the brochure, you know. So I did something that I've never done before or since in my life. I was so frustrated, and I was frustrated because this is the thought that got me over the top frustrated. I thought to myself, you know, he would pick today to go to Davis. That's just like him. I know you never think like that, but I was thinking, it's just like him to do that. And so I was really frustrated now, and I did, again, something I've never done before or since then. I was pacing up and down the office hallway, thinking of other things that he had done. I know you don't do that either, but I was thinking of all these other things he did that just irritated me, and I was really working myself up, and eventually I got so worked up, which again I've never done before or since, that I made my way to the back of the church and to the door, which was a metal door, thankfully, and I was just emotionally out of control, and my wife will tell you, I mean, I'm not given to anger. I mean, I have plenty of flaws, but that's not one of my big ones. And so, I mean, I'm not a very emotional guy. This is it right here. This is all you're going to get. You know, I'm at the peak of my emotions. I'm so fired up right now. If you had any idea, it'd blow your mind. But this is all you're going to get on the outside. This is me, you know, total picture right now. But I was over the top that day. I went to the back door, and as hard as I could, it sort of, bam, I kicked that door, turned around. Of course, my foot felt like I was broken. But I was just so mad. I reached the peak, and I kicked that door, and I turned around, and I started to walk, and I went three steps, and God is my witness. I know he's here because Jesus said whenever two Christians get together, I'll be there in the midst. So I know Jesus is in this room right now. That's not a joke. It's not hyperbole. It's reality. He's here. So I would never lie in front of him. Of course, I know I'm in front of him everywhere all the time. But so I'm not joking or lying or stretching the truth or anything. I walked three steps and I felt a hand in my chest. It was so real. It took my breath away. And I heard the Lord speak to me almost like he spoke to my wife on the lake. It was almost audible. It was so real. And I heard him say this, "I want you to forgive that man." Now, here's how pathetic I was then. I'm a little more mature now, but a little more. But then I was much less mature, even as a pastor. And I thought he was kidding. I mean, he knew that guy too, and he couldn't possibly like him. You know, I mean, come on. So I thought either that was the devil talking to me or the Lord was joking. So, I mean, I'm sorry, but that's what I thought. I just tried to shake it off. And I took three more steps, and boom, that hand was in my chest again, took my breath away, and I heard the Lord speak to me in a way I hope he never speaks to you. His voice went down about three notches, sounded like James Earl Jones. And he said, I want you to forgive that man now. All of a sudden, I realized this wasn't one of the 10 suggestions. You're going to do this. And I just began to come apart at the seams. I wept openly, just sobbing, because I felt like Jesus was standing in front of me, not asking, telling me to do something, and I just flat out couldn't do it. I was going to have to disobey right in front of him, and it just ripped me up, and I'm just sobbing, and I'm crying out to him, saying, Lord, I can't do this. What you're asking me to do, I don't have the capacity to do. I don't know how to forgive this man. I don't know how to let go. You're going to have to help me if you want me to do this. And when I said, you're going to have to help me, an amazing, miraculous thing happened. It was like the windows of heaven opened, and I saw all of the sins I had committed up to that point in my life. And I'm like, I don't know, 31, 32 years old at that point. And I had not been a Christian until I was 22, so I was a really good non-Christian. I mean, really effective non-Christian, you know what I mean? And so there were lots of things to see, and it was like a kaleidoscope in front of my eyes. I was seeing not just the things that I had done when I was a drug dealer and other things like that, but I saw my thoughts. I saw the words that I had spoken to people that injured them. And I'm just watching all these things that I had said and done and thought flash before my eyes. And in the middle of it, I heard the Lord speak to me and he said, how many sins have you committed against me? And, you know, when you're looking at them all, it's really hard to lie. So, but there were so many, I couldn't count them. So I just sort of rounded down. I said, I don't know, Lord, a million? Don't look that pious. You're right up there too. When you start counting your thoughts and your words, you're up there with me. I said, I don't know, Lord, a million. And he said, and how many have I forgiven you for? I said, all of them. And then, now I'm not thinking Matthew 18 at all at this point. I have no concept of that. I mean, I've read it, but it's not connecting for me at all. He says, how many have I forgiven you for? All of them. He said, so what do you owe me for those sins? And I said, I don't owe you anything. And he said, that's right. Now, how many sins has this man committed against you? And the tragedy was I had just been rehearsing them. So I actually had a number in my head. You know, round ball, but I had a number. I said, I think 17. So, you know, it didn't take a genius at that point, and I'm not one. But it didn't take a genius to fail to see a million sins, 17. Oh, you've forgiven me for a million, so you want me to forgive for 17. Okay, I said, I get it. I get it intellectually. I didn't feel any different, but I said, I understand what you're saying. So, Lord, I just forgive this man. I don't want him to owe me anything. And when I said that, once again, the windows of heaven opened up, and I was flabbergasted. The Lord showed me how everybody owed me something. My wife owed me a kiss when I came home from work. I never told her that. But inside, there was always this little disappointment when she... Sorry, ladies, but sorry. But, you know, I didn't want you to think what a great guy I am when I said, I still do. But wow, I still do. And I always will. But I was a rat before. And I never told her, you know, you owe me a kiss when I get home from work. But in my heart, there was always this little point disappointment when she didn't show me, you know, meet me at the door with a kiss. And we didn't have tacos every night for dinner, which is my favorite food. And I thought, it's only righteous to have tacos every night for the rest of your life. You know, that's the way. Come on, guys, don't look at me that way. You know what your favorite food is, and you want her to fix it every night. You know, or she knows what it is, she wants you to fix it every night. I don't know, but it's a different world now. But I saw how my kids owed me A's on the report card because they're PKs. I saw how my church owed me. I hated three-day weekends because I knew on three-day weekends a third of the church was going to be gone skiing or some stupid thing like that, you know. When I worked on this incredible message that could transform lives, and they're out, what, skiing? Are you kidding me? Or water or snow or I don't know. What do you do, you know? You did what? And you missed this incredible, are you serious? I never said that to anyone, but in my heart there was always this, oh, crap, it's a three-day weekend. The schmoes are going to be gone this weekend, I know, you know. I'm sorry to tell you that pastors sometimes think that way, but they do. I did. Don't anymore, but I did. So everybody owed me something. And so at that point I said, wow. Now I felt some emotion. I said, I get it, Lord. I just let unforgiveness pile up in me, and everybody owes me something. But I realize you've forgiven me for a million sins, so I don't want anybody to owe me anything. And I said that. I said, nobody owes me anything. And I started shouting it. Nobody owes me anything. Nobody owes me anything. Will you shout it with me? Nobody owes me anything. Oh, that was pathetic. Shout it again. Nobody owes me anything. Man, you're going to have to shout it tomorrow. It will not work for you. And you need it. You need to be clean in your soul tomorrow. You don't need people's junk hanging all over you. When you go to work tomorrow, whatever you do tomorrow, you don't need everybody's junk all over you. But if you don't get passionate about this, you're going to have rocks in your pocket like nobody's business. You're going to have rocks in your soul. They're going to weigh you down. They're going to irritate you. They're going to make you an unhappy, irritable, cranky, bitter person who's always looking to be offended, ready to be hurt. This is not funny business. This is serious business. So when I said, wow, nobody owes me anything. I'm jumping up and down like I am right now. I'm actually jumping up and down. You just can't see it. This is the peak of my leap right here. But I'm jumping up and down saying, nobody owes me anything. And the phone rings. And you know who's on the other end of the line, don't you? Not God. It's that guy. Wow. Now listen to what he said. This is so amazing. And I knew I'd forgiven him because when I answered the phone and he said his name, it was like nothing. You know you have an extra organ here? And when you see somebody or you hear their voice and you haven't forgiven them, it goes, brr. Come on, you got one. I'm not the only person, am I? You got that little organ down there. It has to be surgically removed by God every day because it grows right back. That's why the Lord taught us to pray every day about this, because if you don't surgically remove it every day, you're just walking along and you see that person on the other side of the room, brr. And I felt nothing when I heard his voice. It's like, woo, yeah. I like this. This feels good. Listen to what he said, though, because this is the whole point of the message. And I want to tell you, God is wanting to do miracles in the lives of people in this room that are not happening right now because of this one thing. Listen to what he said. He said, "Pastor, you're not going to believe this. I was just driving down the street, and God spoke to me almost audibly." Wow, that just happened to me. I didn't tell him that, but isn't that kind of weird that God did that with both of us at the same time? When I said nobody owes me anything, God spoke to him. Said, "Pull over at that phone booth. I want you to call Ron and ask if he needs your help with anything." Remember the brochure? Now, it's just a silly brochure, let's face it. But to me, it was a big deal. So I said, "Oh, yeah, the brochure, remember?" "Oh, yes, I remember. Could you come back and do the brochure?" Well, he came back. He was great at graphics. Cranked the mimeograph. He got it out, sent it up to camp. Nobody knew anything happened except me and God. But here's the deal. You and I know, don't we, that if I had not said, "Nobody owes me anything," that phone would not have rung. The brochure would have been garbage. And we're just talking about a silly little brochure. But in this room, there are a lot more important things that are being held up. They're in prison. And they're not getting out until you let go of people's junk. But here's the good news. When you let go, there's no limits to what God can do. He can do the miraculous. He can do the amazing. He will, because that's who he is. And that's why he wants you to talk to him about this every day. And he wants you to be able to get up tomorrow and say, "Nobody owes me anything." Say it again.
Nobody owes me anything.
Like that, yes. Because when you can do that every day for the rest of your life, you're going to be okay. You'll be amazed at how much more fun life is when nobody owes you anything. And Matthew 18 is all about debt, isn't it? And that's what it's like when you don't forgive someone. Essentially, you are saying, "Dude, you owe me. You owe me 10,000 bags of gold, 100 coins of silver. You owe me because I'm hurt." Now listen, if someone's abusing you physically, sexually, verbally, you don't need to put up with that. Forgiveness doesn't mean your brain turns to mush. I ended up firing that guy 30 days later. I let him go. But when I did, I wept with him. I really cared about him. I wasn't angry anymore. There was no acrimony in my heart. I wasn't carrying his junk. I actually loved him, and I let him go because it was the right thing to do. So you understand, I didn't lose my brain. I still helped my kids with my homework, but they didn't owe me that anymore. That was the difference. So you don't lose your brain when you forgive people. And if somebody's abusing you, you don't let them keep doing that. And if you need to report it to the police, you report it. But you just don't have all the junk going on in you. It's not the junk that's driving you. It's righteousness that's driving you. And there's a lot of junk driving people. You with me? Okay. That's really all I had to say. You ready to pray? Jesus, thank you for teaching us how to forgive and help us every day of our lives, Lord, to keep coming to you and to keep forgiving others in your name. Help every person in this room to be able to say, this week, "Nobody owes me anything." Okay, look up at me one more time, if you will. And let me finish with this, and Pastor Tim will come. Please hear this, because if you try it any other way, it won't work. You can only forgive people, only. The only reason, the only basis upon which you can forgive people is that you understand how much you're forgiven. If you don't understand that, you're wasting your time trying to say, "Nobody owes me anything." It will not work. So you have to, at some point, really sit down with God and say, "Lord, how much do I owe you?" And he'll say, "You don't owe me anything." But you'll know, "I owe him a million plus, maybe 2 million by now. That was a long time ago, and I've blown it thousands of times since then. But he's still telling me, 'You don't owe me anything.' And that frees me to turn around and say, 'You don't owe me anything. You're free.'" Now, that doesn't mean that it just means I'm going to let God take care of this. Again, if I need to report somebody to the police, I need to do the right thing. I need to go ahead and fire someone or discipline them or whatever. I can do that. It just means I'm not carrying their junk with me when I do it. I'm free, and I do it for the right reasons. You're free to love everybody. Does that make sense? So please remember that, because if you try to get up tomorrow morning and say, nobody owes me anything, and you haven't dealt with the fact that God has forgiven you for a million plus, you won't be able to do it. You'll just be, you'll be playing a game that doesn't work. So I want to make sure that's really clear. You got to deal with the million of your own sins first. That's the way to do it. Okay? Can you say it one more time? Nobody owes me anything. Thank you.
Thank you, Ron.
Wow.
Stand with me, would you? I heard the Lord speaking to us today. Someone said to me years ago, it doesn't matter how far you've wandered. And today I would say to you, it doesn't matter how long you've been on a detour. You're only one choice away from getting right back on track. One choice. It's not going to take you a long time, just one choice. As I'm sitting here and he's concluding, I'm thinking, you know, the three philosophies in life that I've learned and hear a lot is that, number one, my grandparents passed on their DNA to me, and that's why I am what I am. My parents, number two, are the ones who brought me up. They nurtured me, and that's why I am the way I am. And then there's the fourth, the third philosophy that's around, and that is the culture, the environment that I live in, that's why I am the way I am. I'm telling you that you are today where your choices have brought you, and you will be tomorrow where your choices take you. See, choice is a God-given right that He's given to us, a freedom to choose. Today, and I think of Moses back in the wilderness, I set before you today life and death. And I want you to choose life. I want you to choose forgiveness, because it will open up the doors of heaven. You want a fresh breeze to come through your house? Open up your windows, the windows of heaven. Let Him breathe a new, fresh spirit upon you. And you and I can do that. That's a choice that we can make. I pray, and you don't have to close your eyes, I pray, Lord, for you to show us the depth of our sins, even as we have been instructed today, for surely you have forgiven us a lot. And help us to not just fulfill a commandment of Scripture, but out of the resources of our heart and the thankfulness for our forgiveness, may we offer that, for freely we haven't received. So help us to freely give. I pray these things in your name. Now, if you live this out this week, you're going to come into this place one way, and you're going to walk out a different person. And I don't care who you are, this man needed to hear that. This one right here. Everyone in this room can grow from that message right there, because that wasn't from Ron Pinkston. That was from God to us. Let's walk in forgiveness this week, okay? God bless you.